like to welcome everybody to our monthly board meeting. It's 3 o'clock. We are, and today is Wednesday, October 8th, 2025. We are at the Sevier District Office. And those in attendance are board members Jill Porter, Vice President Ryan Savage, Jack Hansen, and myself, John Foster. Rick Orr has asked to be excused today. And from the administration, we have Superintendent Dr. Keith Douglas, Assistant Superintendent Mike Willis, Business Administrator Chad Lloyd, and Executive Secretary Kristen Nielsen. Will begin with our preliminary. We've asked Mike Willis to offer that.
Good morning, everyone. Our dear kind Heavenly Father, we thank you for this opportunity which we have to meet here today. It's a beautiful area. Please bless us with the discernment to make the decisions that are in the best interest of our students. Please watch over our students, keep them safe and protected. Please bless our teachers to have the ability to touch the lives of our students and those that they serve, that they will know that they are loved. Also allow us to provide the opportunities that will increase the chances for success for our students. These things will be asked by St. Jesus Christ. Amen.
Please follow me in the pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
To begin with, let's look at the consent agenda. Any comments or questions about anything on the consent agenda? Board.
don't, Krista, do you need more information on any of those? Quite yet? Not quite yet. We're waiting for them. She and I talked about it a couple weeks ago. She's waiting for them to open up the registration. So once they do that.
Yeah, I'll start calling.
I know last month most of you mentioned that you're planning to attend. So as soon as that's opened up, Krista will call you and verify. We'll get the info for that. I noticed that they opened up the registration for the USBA conference in Salt Lake City today or yesterday. So that's coming, and Krista will be reaching out to you on those two.
It looks like it is open today as well. So it's open. So
the USBA one is?
Uh-huh. Yep.
So is it easier just to kind of work through that case by case once you get the flight?
Uh-huh. Yep.
All right. All right. My first information item is just kind of a reminder to each of you that it's October's Principal Appreciation Month. That's what I actually talked about today on the radio. I think a couple of you were able to listen in. I know you all have different things going on. They do send us a recording, and I'll have Krista put the recording. It's about a 15-minute radio spot like it is every month, and well, it's about every 6 weeks. But I got that recording, and Krista will put it on our website. But that's what I was on with Michelle Nelson. She's the South Sphere Middle School principal. She did an excellent job talking about South Sphere Middle, and then I spent most of my time talking about principals. It was great. It was a really good opportunity to... I cited some research that was quite current. It was done on a 2021 research study on the effectiveness of principals, and it was pretty neat to look at that, because I've always believed it. If you have a school with a good principal, this research shows that students in that school are gaining 3 months additional learning than in a school in the same amount of time, the equivalent to 3 months. Than a school with an ineffective or below average principal. So, and they use lots of different metrics to look into what effective principals look like. And as you know, our district is full of above average. They're excellent, driven, really quality principals with high expectations. So we do, you'll hear the radio ad throughout the month, which is fun, where we talk about, we at least mention each principal by name in our district. There's a newspaper ad. It's really hard between Krista and I to take a picture of them. It's hard to get them all in the same room. But we got a pretty good, we're missing two, but we got 12 out of the 14 if we count our lead teachers in the picture from principal's meeting yesterday. And so that'll run in the papers thanking them. So just a good reminder. Legislative update. Not a lot has changed. We've had several legislative meetings. Legislature's meeting, they call them interim meetings. They're meeting almost year-round. There's a lot of work that goes into the legislative session before the session begins in January. But right now, what's on my mind is school safety funding. We had superintendent's meeting on Monday, and I was actually on the agenda because I'm a newly appointed member of the State School Safety Task Force. Well, it's the advisory. We are the group. There's kind of two. I'm not a member of the task force. There's two groups. We advise the task force. And I think we convinced ourselves really easily that funding is what's lacking at this point with school safety. We've had two major legislative bills come through that require lots and lots of schools. We've talked about the Guardian program, the Educator Protector program, the secure entryways, shatterproof glass, there's panic buttons, all of these different components, and it's very complex and big. The good news is, in this first advisory board meeting that I was in, it sounds like they're going to slow that down as a legislature. They're happy with where they're at. They've boiled it down to things that they feel schools can implement, and we've got a really good timeline. For the most part, we're happy with. We feel like, as far as safety, things look really good, especially in severe schools. We're in a good place. What we lack is funding. We need money to implement what's left. So we're working on a lot of technology pieces with the panic buttons and the intercom systems, and we do not have the funds to implement those systems. And so this year, we're working as superintendents and board members and business administrators, our joint legislative group, to really prioritize at a minimum $100 million statewide to go specifically to school safety, which is not that much money if you look at the overall budget. We're also asking that those funds come out of the economic stabilization account that was set aside for public ed, which should be the dollars coming to school districts anyways. But you've heard me, my frustration with those dollars becoming kind of a pilot playground for legislators, where they look at things. The one that I always cite, you heard me talk about it at our last legislative meeting, is where they put $300 million towards teacher performance pay, and those dollars could have easily gone to safety. It's really frustrating to see those types of projects. And we try to help legislators understand and meet with them. And I think we'll get some momentum where the economic stabilization should be going to schools anyways. We're just asking for the money they should be sending in the name of safety. So that's my big priority this year, as well as the regular priorities with funding. But I'm really hoping we can gain momentum with PTA, UEA, every single educational group in the state ought to be banging that drum that we've got to have funds. And that $100 million won't cover it, but it'll at least get us started. And those are one-time funds, so that's the perfect use for one-time funds, is capital safety projects. So I'm really hoping we can gain momentum there. Anything to add, Chad, or anything that's come up?
No, it's just about the money.
Most schools have the buzzing entrances now.
We all do, yes.
Okay.
Every school.
So what your $100 million, what is specifically do you want for our district?
Yeah, so, yes. So what's next on our piece, you know, pieces that we still need? Intercom, the panic buttons will be provided as part of last year's allocation, but they're very, very basic. The panic buttons that we've been wanting are the audio enhancement type. So when teachers have the audio enhancement systems and they're wearing the microphone, there is a panic button now that's inclusive in the microphone. So we want a tool that they're going to be using every day that's not going to be foreign to them, that it just comes naturally. So it makes it more secure. And we need funding for that entire piece. There's intercom systems and ways for teachers to alert the front office and directly alert law enforcement to respond in cases of an emergency. So that's a missing piece. The shatterproof glass is a missing piece. We have some fencing things that we need to take care of. There's several pieces. And for us, I mean, we usually get a good way to kind of look at that. We get about 1% of what is allocated. So we're going to need a lot more than that to accomplish these things. But fortunately, within the bill, they've allowed time. You know, certain things have to be in by 2028. Certain things have to be in by 2030. And there's other pieces, some of which we generally talk about in closed session because we don't want the entire public to know what we're doing to secure and keep schools safe. But in a nutshell, those are some of the things. The state rules that are requiring those things and the timeline are very public. So what we're discussing is appropriate. But I would love to implement the panic button section as an instructional tool. So if you implement it with the audio enhancement, the research shows that learning increases with audio enhanced. Everyone can hear better. Teachers don't have to exhaust themselves with loud voices. They can talk more in a calm, normal, natural tone. There's video components to that I love, that teachers can hit a button on their mic and it'll record their instruction and then they can post it on Canvas. There's also safety video component. These are all very expensive. Those are several. I'm hoping just for the basic components and then add-ons. But I would love to have, as part of that, they just, in an emergency, they just hit the button and then everything's recorded, which is very crucial and essential for law enforcement. But there's lots of different pieces of that. The frustration we've had, and I've mentioned it several times to legislative leadership, is we've been working using our own funds for years on door locks. That's another component. Our door locks are in pretty good shape. Secure entryways where they buzz in. We've had major projects where we have a nice vestibule, so it's a welcoming place, but it's a secure place. We've done a lot of that on our own, and then when it came time to allocate money last year, we got nothing because we weren't seen as a needy school because we had been proactive ourselves, and I've explained how frustrating that is. So I'm hoping this time around they allocate it. And there's other districts that have done similar. Our cameras, that's another component. You have to have a certain level of camera, number of cameras as part of safety. We've done all that on our own for years. We have really... Why punish us? Because we've gotten ahead of the game in certain areas, and we need funding in other areas. So there's lots to it. It's quite complex, but the entire state needs funding. We've been very, like, to me, the key component of all of it is to have a school resource officer in every school. And statewide, we're not even close to that. They really ought to fund ongoing. That's the key component of the whole thing. In our county, we're fortunate that we had already started it with our 2013 voted leeway. And then luckily, in our county, we all work so well together. Our county commissioners, our local sheriff, our chiefs of police. We're meeting the law as far as the number of SROs we have available to each school. So
I'm impressed. I've been in Sline Elementary School a few times, and there has been a police officer there every time.
There should
walking the halls going through the classroom. So I've been impressed with.
Yep.
And it's not just a Salina police officer yesterday; it was a sheriff.
A sheriff deputy. Yep. And that's. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
They really need to implement that statewide, and it would be a tremendous ongoing expense, but there's nothing more important than student safety. So that's the legislative focus. I wanted to mention another thing that is kind of frustrating, because legislators say it all the time, and they know it, how well we're doing as a state with public ed. U.S. News and World Report, which is it's a respected research group, have Utah, I think this is the third year in a row now, where Utah's ranked number one state in the country as far as all of their variables. I think they look at, I had some notes here, like 8 variables. They look at crime, economy, education, fiscal stability, healthcare, infrastructure, natural environment, and opportunity. And Utah's number one. In that same research, in education, we're number 4. And that includes higher ed and K-12 education. So with K-12, we're out of 50 states to do that well. And then when you look specifically at spending, we're number 48 in spending, but yet we're number 4 in production. So it's a tremendous return on investment. We're 46 this year in spending, in school funding. So but they actually use that against us. They say, see, we've proven to everyone that it's not about money. We're doing a great job on what we spend. And we always say, well, if you'll spend a little more, watch what we can do. So we're always striving for more funding. And, you know, in defense of their argument, we have more kids than any other state. We just do. Sadly, the birth rate is significantly declining across the world, and the birth rate in Utah is following that same trend. But it's worth noting that public ed in Utah does a tremendous job as far as return on investment. In another research journal, Consumer Affairs, Utah ranks number 5 in the country in K-12. Last year, we ranked number 2 in the U.S. News and World Report one as far as education. So there's so much good, and then when you get up there in policy discussions and up on the Hill when you're testifying in committee meetings, it just feels like we're constantly under attack. It's interesting. We really ought to be celebrating and building upon our success and addressing our weaknesses. But I talked about that last month on the radio a little bit. Overall, Utah does a great job, and as you all know, next month I think I share our district report card, but we're almost always above the state average in our reading and math. K-5, middle school, we're right there, usually above the state average. High school, we slip a little bit. We're usually a point under in the ACT, but as far as graduation rates and students going on and succeeding in college pathways, I mean, we're just soaring. We're doing a wonderful job. So I think it's important to share that with the world and make sure people understand what a great job our teachers are doing in the classroom and our support staff and all of our school principals and leaders. Discussion items. I always like to come back to the vision, mission, and goals. I think if I were to ask anybody, Chad could teach this because he's heard me say it 500 times in the last 14 years. But for me, the one that I really keep coming back to, I mean, all of these are important, but it's the difference between teaching and ensuring learning. You've heard me talk a lot about it. We've been talking to principals again about the importance of that. It's not about teaching and what's taught. It's about what's being learned. There's a huge difference. Teaching just isn't enough. We have to ensure that students learn. And I wanted to share a little video clip, but as we talked about the multiplier effect, the principals are really buying into that. They're turning in their goals and their self evaluations and improvement plans, and I've loved reading those because most of their goals are related to what we're learning in this multiplier effect book. That you want to be a multiplier. You want to get everyone around you engaged and maximizing their talents and abilities. And the chapter we're reading right now is talking about don't be an accidental diminisher, and that's what the quote says. By learning to do less and challenge more, we can transform from being an accidental diminisher to an intentional multiplier. There's some really good things in there. I'm an accidental diminisher. I tend to rescue people too quickly. When I see them struggling, I go and help them. Sometimes they need to struggle through so that they can become stronger and learn more. Another part of the chapter we're studying is the diminishing factor of always being on. Ask anyone. I'm always on. Like, I don't even sleep. I just am always on. That's a bad thing. That diminishes the progress of other people. So there's some really, really good pieces to that. I want to show this little video. This actually comes from the Solution Tree group that we take teachers every summer. And he's talking a lot about ensuring learning. I'm not going to show you the whole video. I'm just going to show you the end portion. But let me plug in here. I just want to always keep you up to speed on what we're working on in principals meeting and what they're in turn working with principals or teachers on. Principals are working with teachers on. Let's see if I can hurry and grab the screen. Might make you jump off. Okay, let me just hit a light so you can see. Like I said, I'm skipping through some of this, but this was my favorite part that we shared with principals, and we had an in-depth discussion. That doesn't sound right. Let me double check. There we go. Still doesn't sound right, does it? Maybe it's just this.
Has learned. And what's interesting is this is not a novel idea, right? We're not the first to suggest that learning should be the priority. In fact, one of my favorite books is an oldie but a goodie by John Holt called How Children Fail. And long before Bob Marzano and John Hattie were doing meta-analyses, John Holt was examining the research that had been done at that time on how schools have been able to close the achievement gap. How are they able to do it? How are they able to close the gap between the students in urban schools, suburban schools, rural schools, high income, low income, diverse, non-diverse, you name it. He was looking into that research, trying to figure out how do we close the achievement gap in schools. And he summarized the research in this book, How Children Fail. And in my mind, before anybody had begun to talk about this idea of schools as professional learning communities, John Holt nailed it. And this is what he said. He said, the researchers then examined these schools to find out what qualities they had in common. And of the five they found, two struck me as most crucial, he wrote. Number one, if the students did not learn, the schools did not blame them, or their families, or their backgrounds, or their neighborhoods, or their attitudes, or nervous systems, or whatever. They did not alibi. They took full responsibility for the results or the non-results of their work. And number two, when something that they were doing in class was not working, they stopped doing it, and they tried to do something else. They flunked the unsuccessful methods, not the students. And the scary thing about this research, in my mind, is that it was done way back in 1964. In other words, we've known for more than 50 years, 60 years, what works and what doesn't in schools. And it's not a new program, it's not a new initiative, it's not a different textbook, it's not even new computers or new iPads or whatever the case may be. It's creating a culture of learning rather than teaching as our fundamental purpose. And this brings us to the next question I'd like you to chit-chat about. And that is, in our schools, when kids aren't learning, do we alibi? And what do some of those alibis sound like? If we were to hear an alibi in your school, what would it be? For example, is it that, oh, well, these kids aren't learning because they're on their phone too much. These kids aren't learning because they're not doing their homework, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right?
I really love this. It's what I've...
Rather than teaching.
I've believed in this my whole life. I just... And it is kind of shocking that this is coming from research from 1964, which is crazy to me. But it's not rocket science. If we're teaching something and the kids aren't learning, we stop doing that thing and teach something in a different way to ensure that students learn. And then I love what he talks about, one of the key components. We don't blame the students or their families or their backgrounds or their attitudes or even their nervous systems. We just take what we have and we help them achieve higher. And I love it. I love that last sentence. They flunk unsuccessful methods, not the children. And you know, we've worked really hard in our district over the last several years. We started tracking the number of students that were failing in middle and high school about 10 years ago. I think it's close to 10, maybe eight total years. And we've reduced that rate significantly. But we still have pockets where we just made a D a new F. And that's not what we're trying to do. What we're trying to do is ensure learning, not lower the standard. We're trying to give more kids more opportunities to meet the standard. And we're getting there. We're slowly getting there. But this is the type of discussion that we're having in principals meeting, and then in turn principals are having with teachers, and it's been really, really good to see. Any questions or comments on that? I think it's good. We're really making headway there. But obviously we're still, even when Gail Albrecht was the assistant superintendent, she would always say, okay, you're not even close. You're still not even close. We thought we were making gains on this. And some people still have a hard time understanding what we mean by that. But we are closing the gap. We just still have lots of work ahead of us. My last item, I skipped item 3. Now I'm skipping back to item number 2. I wanted to share the stay interview survey results from last year. We finally got all that tallied up. I'm going to share on my screen. these results. So remember last month I talked about our stay interviews. We end up interviewing about 50 teachers a year. Nolan Anderson and I spend about 15 to 20 minutes per teacher. And I'm going to share these specific results. They're, in my opinion, very, very positive. Nolan and I have done about 40 of them this year already. And so I'll be sharing those results in about 2-3 months. And so it'll get to where every December, January, you can watch for a report on these stay interviews, as well as right now we're surveying every single employee. It's a very short, like 8-item survey, and it'll be wrapping up in about 10 days. But the results are pouring in. We already have about 450 employees that have taken it. We have about 700 on payroll, so we're going to keep encouraging. Mike sent out an email today asking them to please take it. And that gives us a baseline on very similar data. We call them stay interviews because we want them to stay. We want our employees to stay with us. We've invested in them, and we want them to stay. So we ask them a series of questions on what their needs are, if their needs are being met. As far as the interview process, for me, it's not so much about what they... You know, we take notes and we address their concerns, but it's process over product. It's the fact that we're spending that time with them. They're getting to know us. They're more comfortable. I've received several emails. Hey, one thing I forgot to mention to you and Nolan was this. Can you work on that? You bet. Well, it's just opened up an open, transparent conduit for communication. So these are from last year. You'll be getting this year's in a couple months, and then we'll settle in and give you all of the information once a year. So we interviewed last year 56 teachers, 27 elementary, 27 secondary, that's kind of interesting, and 2 mental health specialists. And these are teachers or certified personnel that are in their 2nd, 4th, and 6th year. Question 1, how committed are you to Sevier School District? The average response was a 9.5 out of 10, which is fantastic. It ranged from 7 to 10. We had a few 7s. Question 2, on a scale of 1 to 10, how likely are you to... Well, that was at your school. How likely are you to stay in the district is 9.7. So there are a few teachers out there that might want... They might be living in Monroe and working in Richfield, and they would look for a transfer, but they're happy in their schools. So that's a good indicator. I think a really positive indicator. What are the factors that help you feel committed or loyal to our district? In other words, what keeps you here? This one wasn't a rated response, but the top 3, we grouped them into responses because a lot of the teachers said the same thing. The most common response was great support from the building administrators in the district. So that's excellent. The community and where we live, that's a little bit obvious. A lot of them live here because it's where they grew up. It's home. They love it here. And the 3rd most common was the culture and school environment, which I love to hear because we've invested significantly in improving school culture. This was just a comment, home and small town, here's where our friends are, not just colleagues. The culture is very good and we all get along. The support is very good. Question number 4, do you know who your mentor is and are they supporting you? Obviously, one of the reasons that teachers leave is they don't feel like they have the support they need. 53 teachers responded yes, 3 responded no. So there were 3 that said, no, I don't know who my mentor is. So we immediately addressed that. We want to make sure that they know who their mentor is and their mentor knows who they are. But still quite a positive response. Just shows we still have some work to do. Item 5, if there were something you could change about your job or the school or the district, what would it be? The most common response was nothing, everything's great. The 2nd most common was more instructional aids in the classroom. And the 3rd most common was more maternity leave, which we actually fixed that this year to where maternity leave, through a legislative bill last year, is taken care of. So I don't think we'll hear that one again. We've heard everything from, I need a door here, I want this wall moved, all sorts of comments. And honestly, a lot of those things can be done. It just takes time. It has to be on the principal's radar. What additional support could we provide? The most common is nothing, I'm good. 70% of the teachers responded that way. 2nd response was more training, more professional development, and PLC's collaboration, more time. And then the 3rd one is we need more instructional aids, more support. The seventh question, when you have a really challenging student in your classroom, what helps you feel supported in meeting the student's needs? One of the things we're looking for is the third thing that was mentioned. We hope that they say mental health specialist, mental health therapist, refocus teams, and admin. This is good. I just wish it was listed in reverse. I don't think all of our employees are aware of all the wonderful tools that are now in their toolbox. When Mrs. Porter was principal, she didn't have a full-time assistant principal. She didn't have a mental health therapist. She didn't have an SRO. I could go on and name all the other tools she didn't have. She did an excellent job, but we've worked our tails off to put these tools in the toolbox, and if people aren't using the tools and implementing those tools, we're missing the boat. So what I'm looking for on this one is, number one, mental health therapist, number two, refocus coordinator, number three, admin team or my own team. And we still got there. These were good responses, but we're trying to improve to make sure everybody knows about the tools. Does that make sense on that one? And then I think this is the last question. Where do you see yourself in 3 years? 100% of the responses said they plan to be here in Sevier School District, many hoping to get their master's degree, some teachers hoping to move into administrative positions down the road. So, again, I've told you our survey's out. We're hoping for 100% response rate. So far, just glancing at that survey, one of the areas we're a little low is there's a question that asks them if they've been thanked or praised for the work they're doing. And it was like 75% said yes, and 10% were neutral, which I don't know what that means. And then about 10% said no so far. And I thought, yeah, that is an area we've really got to be careful with to make sure everyone feels appreciated, the power of gratitude and the momentum of positivity. So there's other areas that we're going to see that are low that we can set goals to improve. I think we can always work on communication. But any questions on any of those or on anything I've presented? Okay, that's all I have.
Thank you, Senator. Mr. Wills.
Are you going to take that mic?
Yeah, I'll take it.
Yeah, I'm not on it.
I'm not on it either, man.
Okay.
It's showing up.
There it is.
Okay. You doing okay? You all right?
I'm not sleeping, so.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and get started with my first item. The reason it's on here, school report card, is because generally in September is when we go through the release. Hold on, I won't conference room. The public release of the school report card for Data Gateway. But because of the delay in the assessment data in language arts, it's been pushed to January. But I still wanted to touch on that a little bit because I've tried to share with you over the past few months some of the items or the tools available to our principals to dig into the data. And one of them, if you go to the data gateway, you see this whole list of assessment tools, comparing schools, those types of things that I've gone through. But down here a little bit, you also have the school report card. And that's one thing that I think is... Let's see, I thought I had another one of them up there, right? Is another item that they use that does provide some data on the schools. And this is the last year's data, but it still gives you an overall idea of how they can use this tool. So, for instance, if we're talking about achievement, I pulled up South Sevier Middle School here. Pull up on the achievement piece. It gives you an indicator right out of the gate, kind of where they are, commendable, which is in the green, which means their scores are pretty good comparably speaking with the rest of the state. They're actually really good compared to the rest of the state. But if I click on that, it breaks it down even further. It goes into the demographics and so forth, but I can break down language arts, for instance, the score. It kind of gives me an idea of where they scored overall, school average, district average. It just has a comparable. Also has trend data and then breaks it down into the subgroups as well. And so this is just one more tool that principals can use to find out kind of a where their school is and how it's doing, kind of put a pulse on what's going on, and then make some adjustments one way or another depending on where they perform. And it could be, I know some of our schools, they might perform really high in certain subjects, and then other areas they have weaknesses that they can focus on and try and improve through multiple strategies. But I just thought, where I usually present on this time of the year, just so that you have an idea of what a school report card, they no longer give the letter grade, but they give the idea of how the school is doing overall, which I think is much improved from just giving the letter grade. But for your information, the latest data, they should have it all cleaned up and put in, and early January is when we'll receive the data to review it, make sure that it's correct, and then the public will receive that end of January for this next batch of data. Moving down to my item number 2, multi-tiered systems of supports. I just wanted to also share with you some of the things that we're maintaining there. Shyla Anderson has done an outstanding job in compiling a lot of the information. Superintendent talked about some of the important things that our newer teachers, but all teachers, I think, realize that the toolbox has grown. That we have a lot more things for our teachers to use, especially in the way of mental health for not only our students, but also our staff members. And so some of those things, our handbook is something that was developed over a 5-year period and was compiled as multiple pages of information on our district and the things that we have kind of dove into, if you will, and tried to make our district kind of the flagship when it comes to mental health for our people. And so you kind of see lots of information there, and it goes on and on, but just as a synopsis on what's happening right now, if I look at this is our progress report for the year. I just had Shyla update this. It's just a few pages, but you could see if I break it down by school, we've come a long way. If it's green, it's good. And you could see that whole page. We've really worked hard with our schools, with our principals, with our teacher teams, our PBIS teams, and so forth, admin, to set goals and to achieve those goals. And you can see how all our schools are on track with the goals that are set. The expectations are in place. They know what they are. And then you see when we survey the high numbers or the high percentage numbers of people answering, from student to teacher to parent and faculty as well. And so lots of good information come down here. Obviously, we're never done. There's always room to improve. But ultimately, when we talk about the areas that we want to keep getting better at, it's a work in progress, and we've done really, really well over the past few years with this, considering the people that have worked to make this work with, from Shyla Anderson to, we had our outside evaluator come in and work with Shyla, and then we meet several times a year with our admin teams to provide that information, not only to them, but to their staff, so that they're aware of where our goals are and make sure that we're working to achieve those. Another thing along those same lines, this is just recent. Our principals and assistant principals are signing up for this youth mental health first aid trainings. It's been a few years since they've done this. We want to have it on a rotation so that every 3 years they are re-upping, if you will, on the trainings. And so they pick the dates, and it's an all-day training on youth mental health first aid. So that's the next thing in line that they'll be doing as well.
That's one thing. I love that you showed the percentage of implementation. I think it's just such a good example of how strategic you have to be to really bring about consistent change. I wish our community knew. I know we've struggled as a community with student mental health and suicide and these tragedies, but we work really hard at trying to have stability for student mental health. And it's been a tremendous blessing to our teachers and schools to provide that support to students. And a lot of people that are critical, you know, it comes up politically on the Hill, those that are critical of student wellness and mental health don't understand that it's really hard to learn anything until you're stable, and emotionally stable. And we try to stay out of that arena, but we have to touch it sometimes so that students are well enough to learn. I feel like we really found a good balance there.
I agree. And the one thing that I think a lot of people don't see behind the scenes is the fact that the problem is growing. It's a much bigger problem than it was several years ago. And we've tried to hit it head on. I think our district, probably statewide, is known for the efforts that we've put in, the investment that we've put into this, because we love our kids so much and we want them to be successful, but we also want them to be healthy, and mental health is a big part of that. And one thing that people don't see is we have added to the toolbox a lot over the past few years, but the problem continues to grow. You look around the world today and it is an issue everywhere, but we definitely try and cover our bases with that. We want kids to feel healthy and safe and secure, and that's one thing we put a lot into this, and that's why we have some of these people hired in these positions to continually monitor it. We follow I've brought it up in the past. We have a program called BARC that picks up keywords and emails that the students write back and forth, and if there's ever a red flag there, it's filtered by not only the system, but by multiple people at the district level that are checking in, and then there's a connection or a communication between the school and everybody involved with that to get certain students help if they're sending out those red flags. So that was Safe UT and several other areas. It's a work in progress, but I feel really good about the efforts we've made. But like I said, the problem isn't going away, so we have to continue to come up with new strategies and ways to address those things. So it's a big, big push in our district. Has been for a number of years now. One of the other things that we do is we do the parent seminars, what they're called now, for student protection. We used to call them parent nights. Each attendance area covers what's listed up there, from addressing substance abuse, bullying, mental health, internet safety, and suicide prevention. They've come up with a variety of ideas. They've tried this year, and they try something else next year. And the fact is, we want the right people at those meetings, along with anybody else that would like to join, kind of see what we're doing on that front. We have in the past, through the grant, had money to provide drawings of different things. And that money, because we no longer have the grant, it was a five-year award. We're seeing a decline in the people that are attending those meetings in the evening, and that's a little frustrating, because I think everybody would benefit from it, but we are required by state code and state law to provide those. It's just we need to figure out a way to keep people coming, even if they don't have a shot at winning a Blackstone. So anyway, we can come. Maybe we could trick them into getting there. I don't know. We'll figure it out. But the Salina area, they've completed theirs, and numbers were a little lower. And so we're hoping Monroe still has theirs in October and Richfield in November. We're still hoping that we can get a fairly decent turnout for those two areas when it comes to providing that information to our parents, and so they have it in the home, so they're aware. Dropping down to assessment. All our beginning of year assessments are complete. Feeling good about that. And so we're just rolling right through the year. Just like always, it comes and goes really, really fast. and then dropping down to our professional learning opportunities. I know I keep this on every time, but it's such a valid thing. You notice the videos that superintendent shows that came from the Solution Tree Global PD library that we invest in for our principals to use in trainings and their faculty meetings. And I know superintendent uses it in our principal meetings and in board meetings, and they are such good reinforcements for what we're doing. It's always good to hear it from somebody else in the Solution Tree. People are excellent at doing that. But so we're all set. I've already purchased the 25 slots for the upcoming PLC at Work conference this upcoming summer, and so I think we're excited about that. So I'll just keep on reminding you of that because it is such a big part of our district. One thing that I pushed harder this year than I have in the last few years, trying to work my schedule around getting to the PLCs district-wide on a more continuous or constant basis, and I am so pleased with what I'm seeing. I can't tell you how impressed I am, and a lot of it is due to the fact that we invest in this and we send people to these types of trainings. But you go into a PLC, and almost all of them are run like a well-oiled machine. It's amazing to me how much over the past several years, a lot of the fluff has been cut out, and we strictly focus in those PLC meetings the collaboration on instruction and improving instruction in our district, and they're really impressive. I would encourage any of you, if you'd want to attend a PLC in our district, to feel free and go and sit in. It's an impressive thing to watch. One of my last items, number five there, Sevier County Intergenerational Poverty Annual Report. It's actually the state's report came out. I guess it's bittersweet every time I bring this up, but I scrolled down through it. It's not as user-friendly as it once was. I used to, and you guys probably remember, I used to pull it up, and it had this neat infographic, and you could click on different places, and it would give you different stats that were really cool, whether it be education or medical or, you know, food or whatever it might be within our... It's a little harder to dig that out now because it's just pages of different things, but this page was interesting to me because it talks a little bit... Try and blow that up a little bit. Talks about the areas of intergenerational poverty, and there is a difference between adult intergenerational poverty rates and child intergenerational rates. Mostly adult, which we have very little control over, is... they get those numbers from adults who grew up in poverty and now they're experiencing poverty as an adult because they were born into or lived in poverty as a child. A child intergenerational poverty rates has more to do with our students, our young people that are experiencing poverty, and it's what we do have a little bit of control over in our buildings, because I think we all would agree that education is one of the key components to ending intergenerational poverty or helping these students. It's a difficult thing, though. Our teachers, Jill can speak to this because she was at Ashman. She went from the high school down to Ashman, and she saw it firsthand that a lot of our kids that are born into poverty, they don't have the support system. Education is not necessarily valued in the home. What's valued is their next meal or their, you know, whatever it might be. That starts us behind the eight ball when you look at the numbers there. San Juan, because of the reservations and where it's located, is always usually the highest. But you see Sevier is number three on the list when it comes to intergenerational poverty for our children. Now that means we have to have the best of the best when it comes to teachers to kind of overcome that obstacle, which is a difficult thing to do. But I think we do an outstanding job addressing the needs of children, especially when they come ill-prepared, and we have to come up with different ideas to try and make that a level playing field. I could go to the other end, and I scrolled through this whole document, and you see the Summit counties and Wasatch counties and the, you know, Park City area. They're on the other end of the spectrum, right? And so, but we're competing against those people when it comes to jobs and so forth with our children once they get out of schooling. So We need to do our very, very best. We need to put our best foot forward. And I do feel like we do more with less than anyone in the area, because we do have some kids that are have these struggles. We love them just the same, sometimes even more, and they do bring challenges, and that's one thing that we have to address, whether it be behavior or just a lack of preparedness coming to school. It's something that we have to be aware of, that our county struggles with students being born into poverty, and we're trying to break that cycle through education. And that's why it's frustrating when superintendent brings up the fact that we do have families that are choosing other avenues and different things, when we feel like we do have the best show in town and we can definitely provide opportunities and cover the needs of the students, whether they're born into poverty or not. We want to give them all the best opportunities for a good, successful life. And dropping down to my last item, nationally, it's the Red Ribbon Week is the end of October. And the theme this year is Life is a Puzzle, Solve It Drug-Free. So there will be lots of activities involved with our Red Ribbon Week. We encourage our principals of each school to make that a special time and make parents and students aware that we're working really hard to solve that equation as well. So, any questions for me? That's all I have. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Chad.
I'll just give you a quick update on construction projects at North and South High. The actual construction projects that we're under contract with Tusher on, so the locker room and the gym updates, basically the bleachers that we're doing in the gym, is basically done. At North Sevier, they're wrapping up the bleachers right now. Other than if you recall, the stadium seating won't be here until later in November. The locker rooms have been essentially down to a punch list for since the beginning of the football season, so they're done. The only thing really lingering out there as far as what we're still under contract with for Tusher is just the installation of the retractable basketball hoops. If you recall, that was an additional item that we had bid as part of the job, so we could evaluate it and see how much money that was going to cost. But that is something we opted to do, was install new retractable hoops in both of those gyms. So those are actually scheduled to arrive early next week. They take 3 to 4 days installation at each site, so those should be installed within, if not by the end of next week, the following week. Given that I live over there in Monroe, and I'm sure, I don't know, living, you know, Jill over in North Sevier here's same thing. I think there's confusion on, you know, I just hear a lot of things from people in the community or from our own workers or from my kids that go to the school of why are these construction jobs taking so long? Why are we not back in our gym? Well, they're not. The construction job's actually right on time. What's taking long now and is becoming extremely frustrating is these gym floors that are a separate job. They are part of the construction project, and the schools opted to do those. I warned them and told them that this would be an absolute nightmare to do, and it's becoming to the point of I'm now fearful that they won't be done in time for the basketball season. At North Sevier, that isn't an issue because we haven't done anything to the floor. At South Sevier, the floor's torn up. So, just so the board is aware, there are some issues arising that floor might not be done in time for the start of the basketball season.
If you don't have it done, is there an option to
the middle school, which isn't a great option, especially in Monroe, because the bleachers don't pull out far enough to accommodate everybody. So the issue we're running into in Monroe is when they pulled the wood up from our flooding 2 years ago, the cement was still saturated with water, And we've been 3 weeks now trying to dry it out, and the moisture level's still too wet. The contractor will not reinstall the floor. So we knew this going in, and last year the decision was made to just play on the floor. But the, like I said, the school's kind of opted in to get these floors done, and now we're running into the issues. And now you also have the in construction, like most of you are well aware, you can't give a contractor anybody to blame, or it just becomes well it's the electrician's fault, it's the plumber's fault, now we've given the floor guy the opportunity to blame Tusher, and Tusher the opportunity to blame the floor guy, and things just aren't getting done the way they should. Anthony and me had a meeting today with the flooring contractor. He's telling us he will have a crew here on site Monday. They were supposed to be here last Monday and nobody showed up, but he told me he will have somebody here Monday. We'll test the moisture level at South Sevier. Hopefully it's dropping, and hopefully it's dropped enough that maybe we can get started on it. If not, we're hopeful that they can just get started on North Sevier and get it done. It takes about 3 weeks to get a floor done. So if he can get started on North Sevier Monday, he should have it done by the end of October. And then it's just a guessing game if he would provide us a second crew or not in order to get Monroe done at the same time if the moisture level's down, or if we have to wait the three-week period to get his crew to transition back over to Monroe. If that's the case, that puts us 3 weeks into November, which is right at the beginning when basketball would be starting.
What about volleyball?
Volleyball's, they're at the middle school. They're not going to be moving back in. If you had asked me that a month ago, in fact, in board meeting, I probably would have told you, yeah, we'll have volleyball right back in Monroe. The bleachers were done.
They're planning on finishing this season at the middle school. Yeah, Brian said, can we have a lawn chair night and have their senior night in the gym and just tell everybody to bring their lawn chairs? I said, no.
And if the people wanted to at North Sevier, well, until they start, if they start on the floor Monday, that won't work. But the floor hasn't been touched over there, so
But you know what? I've just been telling people, look how good it's going to look when it's all said and done. And you know, it's happened before. My senior year, every sport was played in the middle school, and you had a brand new high school setting there, but you couldn't use it because there were no bleachers the entire year, and you went to the middle school. It is what it is.
Well, cross your fingers that we don't have to have a lawn chair night for basketball, because those stadium seats, you know, maybe they won't ship here in time. And they're not scheduled till like the second week of November to be here, so. All the other bleachers will be done, but that bottom stadium seat level, it might be pushing it, so. Anyway, I'm hopeful we can get going on Monday on one of the floors. I'm not quite as hopeful that the contractor will provide us two crews. If he will, then we can maybe get some stuff done here in the next 3 weeks. But we also need moisture. Well, there might just come a point where we have to say we don't care about the moisture level, put the floor back in. Anthony isn't fearful of that at all, because the moisture's been there for 2 years and the floor hasn't gotten any worse. And the moisture was on top of the vapor barrier. I mean, there was water got under the floor on top of our plastic. We now should be able to put down the plastic and the foam backing, and any moisture that would come up would get stopped by that vapor barrier, you would think, but the contractor's unwilling to do anything at this point until we would sign like a liability waiver clearing him of any potential issues in the future. So I think the best bet's keep waiting it out, see if we can get North Sevier going and done, and then hopefully the moisture level will drop a little bit, and then we can just get going. So other than that, I do plan on, when everything is done, I'm going to send out a message to everybody that was on the 10-year building committee and just say, hey, if you want to come over to South Sevier at whatever time on this day, you can come see the shop that we've completed, the new wrestling room, the locker rooms, the new gym, and that would give everybody a follow-up onto the projects that we've completed. Speaking of the 10-year building project, next summer's item is the remodel of North Sevier High School's auditorium. And we actually have the plans done. That we bumped that up because the principal has been willing to just say, hey, if we can get started on it now, let's do it now. I'll move everything out of the auditorium. And we're going to go ahead and bid out that project. The plan's about next week. So we're looking at it like a January start time for that auditorium, which we're hoping will help us on the bidding environment. Maybe we'll get some better bids instead of trying to squeeze it all down into a summer time frame. Along with that project is the North Sevier Middle School. We're calling it a safety remodel because if you walk into North Sevier Middle School, the very first thing you hit is a classroom. So we haven't been able to install the full safety entryway like Jill brought up earlier. It does have a buzz in and you're buzzed into the little entrance way, but we haven't been able to install a nice one because of that classroom. So we've done a whole bunch of, in fact, we had plans done to do it the way Mr. Hink wanted it and the way we thought was best, given Mr. Hink's input. With the change in principal, Matt Reese has given us some other ideas that are a lot less expensive, and we agree with his ideas. So we're actually having the architects redo the plans right now. So our original plan was to bid out it along with the auditorium job at the same time, but we're going to end up bidding that North Sevier Middle School project a little bit later because we're going to redo those plans. But I think it'll save us a significant amount of money if we do that. It will be strictly a summer project because we can't obviously take a classroom away and during the school year. So any questions about any of that? Okay. Number two item on the agenda, I don't have anything to present. Salina City has been communicating with Anthony. Everything's been done with Anthony at this point. They either have a land developer under contract or a realtor of some sort that's been working with them on, I think they want to install some city sidewalk in some areas near the elementary school that we own the property. It's actually across the, if you know where the seminary building is, and we have that bus parking, across the street from that, we actually own that property, which I was unaware of until this even came up. We own the what you would think is the city right-of-way right there off the street, but it's actually our property, so Salina City just needs to get an easement there. But the person that I've been needing to talk to hasn't got back to me on it, so I don't know all the details. So we'll hold off on that until next month, I'm assuming, if she gets back to me. It shouldn't be that big of a deal. We should be able to probably just sign the easement and move along, but
you care about, you caused me to think, just to give a quick update on, I spoke with the UDOT director who oversees a lot of things, but we talked a little while back, the State Street there in Salina, which is the main highway. We called them and just want to ensure that we keep kids safe. It's a busy highway. So they do have the crossing guard and the school zone lights that always come on. And they're going to do, it's become necessary to upgrade the school zone lighting. It's old and they're going to upgrade it. And this might all happen, they're hoping, by the end of the school year. So this is probably a school type project. But he reached out to me and said, are you guys interested in improved lights, more lights? And he said, absolutely. That's a concerning highway. So it's good that we talked to them because it caused them to think a little deeper, and they're actually going to install improved school zone lighting that the crossing guards actually turn those on. I'm sure you've noticed when they show up a little bit early, they turn on the sign, and then they do their crossing guard duties, and then they turn off the sign. And it'll be nice for the crossing guard because now the two signs will turn on at the same time, which is helpful and safer. But then they'll install at the same time when, after hours, when a student or anybody, a pedestrian, wants to cross, they push a button and it turns on the lights, which is really a significant improvement. So I think it's good. I mean, it's not a done deal yet, but it seems very likely that they'll make, why not make those improved adjustments. The crossing, as you'll recall, board member Rasmussen brought up the concern that middle school students were, the crossing point is Third North. Middle school kids were going and buying a donut, and I don't blame them. I'd do the same thing if I was them. They'd buy a treat at Barrett's, and then they'd just walk across the street without, not where they're going, they're jaywalking. They're going where they're not supposed to be walking. And they really ought to, at a bare minimum, go to the four-way stop, wait for the light across. The better is go north to Third North and use the crossing guard. But these added lights and principals and teachers reminding students to, appropriately cross should help. But we did determine to leave the crossing point at Third North because that's where it's always been. It's safer. If you were to try to move it south, those trucks are so big, the double coal trucks, that it makes it almost more unsafe. In fact, I don't even know if UDOT would ever even approve that because those trucks are, one truck blocks almost the whole block. So, anyways, that's coming. I'm glad that we have such good collaboration in Sevier County where people are always thinking and trying to improve. And we had those discussions. That was over a year ago, and now they're like, hey, while we're fixing this, they reached out. So, it's good.
I remember it's quite a discussion.
Yeah.
That. As you're talking about those lights, can we move one of the lights to First North and just slow the traffic down?
I think the signs that are school zone or pedestrian, they're very strict on their codes as to where those can be. So I think they will move. I don't know. I'll have to ask him when he calls me back. Just to slow everybody down soon.
Yeah, you just slow
great
down.
Idea. It'll slow them.
I understand that we went through all of the lengths and everything, how far apart everything would be, that you couldn't put anything there. But
it would make the school zone bigger, is what we're kind of asking. And I'll check with them on that. I think it's a great idea.
It
would keep the 20, at least when we're having kids, the 20 mph zone would be a large, if that's within code, it's worth asking. It's a great idea. I'll follow up with them on it.
I think we need to have a similar conversation with, and I could go approach Monroe City, but we need to have a similar conversation with Monroe City at on the high school, where the high school, there's that crossing walk right there, and it goes across to the parking lot and tennis courts, and that's
busy.
That's like a death trap waiting to happen, and I know they can't, I don't think they can make it a school zone. It's a state, I think it's a state highway. But maybe some increased light, like actual street lighting there at nighttime after a football game or something. There's been some close calls. But probably a similar conversation. Something could be done there to make it a little more safe.
Push button things and just.
Yeah, that's kind of what made me think of that. If there's some kind of push button thing that would show the pedestrians crossing the street, because the street lighting there is kind of not adequate. It's just dark. So,
I'll bring that to him as well. Get it on his radar. Like, help.
Yeah,
I'm
pretty sure it's state.
You think it is a state highway?
I think so.
I think
it goes out there
next to Joseph.
Yeah. I could talk to Allison over there at the city. Anyway, that's all I have. We have some other things we need to talk about in closed session, but we can go to that point in the meeting if you don't have any questions for me.
Thank you, Chad. We do have a closed meeting, so I would entertain that motion to go into closed meeting.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
This will be a roll call vote. Jill Porter?
Yes.
Ryan Savage?
Yes.
Jack Hansen?
Yes.
And I'm a yes. The motion carries. We'll take a short break and we'll move into closed session.